Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time to start the show and talk about the sports we saw. Inside jokes and takes from Danger and Battaglia. Bills and the Sabres and the Amherst. Who gave a microphone to these jerks? G's a big-timer, a social misfit. Clueless to the title of the biggest bus gang hits. Yeah. Chuck Muncy's goons have the last say. So thanks for your time, Mr. Mayo. Danger likes his cold ones and he likes his bears. But this is Rochester, cute princessa.
Normal kiss.
He's critical of Sean, he's critical of Al.
Of course he married Sandy, cause she's Italian.
Welcome to the sports bar, that's where you are. Welcome to the sports bar, that's where you are. Welcome to the sports bar, that's where you are. With Danger and Battaglia.
Not gonna lie, Gino. I'm feeling kind of sentimental today as we start this afternoon in the sports bar, and we welcome you on in. We appreciate you listening, however you may be doing so. You're hearing us on AM 950, 95.7 FM in Rochester, the free to download Odyssey app where we sound our best, and our stream, which is up and rolling now. You can watch us on YouTube, our YouTube channel there. Like, subscribe, hit that bell, that notification bell, so you always know when we go live. And also on Twitch at The Fan Rochester. Feeling sentimental because today we are celebrating a very special anniversary in the sports bar.
Which I had no idea. Danger hit me with that today. Like, hey, do you know what today was? No, actually I did. I know there. Like yesterday was the storm from 2 years ago. That I remember.
But yep. Seven years ago this happened. So we were still in the early infancy stages of the sports bar. We've been on the air together doing this show for eight years.
8 years.
Just over 8 years now. Oh, next year will be a special anniversary.
The 9 year anniversary.
It will be the 9 year anniversary.
Nine years
of the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia.
9 times.
Well, let's work it 1 month at a time here, bud.
7 years ago, this happened. 7 years ago, in the early infancy of the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia, an outcome so shocking that a legend was born.
This is a masterstroke by McDermott.
Anything more than what Tyrod did last week, I would consider thriving for a Buffalo Bills quarterback.
Then that should be Peterman's stats after the first quarter.
Peterman is going to make mistakes.
He might not make it out of the first half.
I have been waiting since week one, and I think that Peterman, from everything we've seen in preseason and in the little bit in New Orleans, I think he's the man.
Dom, I'm warning you.
You watch, Gene.
You're crazy. Why can't it be us? Dude, you're going to be so disappointed.
I'm not.
Monday.
There is no way I'm going to be disappointed Monday.
He was disappointed on Monday. And a legend was born. 7 years ago, the Buffalo Bills took on the Los Angeles Chargers and fell 54-24. Nate Peterman throwing five interceptions in one half of NFL football.
That was Sean McDermott's first year. And Sean McDermott in his infancy wasn't the coach to take the blame, always deflect when he was asked about the decision. I remember this quote, "I don't regret the decision, I regret the outcome."
Yeah. I remember that very well. It was when we kind of learned, okay, there's an arrogance to being an NFL head coach, and he's showing it right now. It's almost as if to say, you know what? I don't care what you think. I'm going to do this, and it's going to work because I believe. I have faith. This is my guy. I mean, Nathan Peterman had some sort of control, mind control, Musk, something that was intoxicating to NFL head coaches, and it was McDermott that bit first.
I believe probably if you got him in a room, like there's a clip of Andrew Luck doing X's and O's with John Gruden, and Andrew Luck is like, okay, and this, that's Nate Peterman, right? If you got him in front of a whiteboard, he could describe every play.
Right.
Problem is, you actually need the talent.
Yeah, you get introduced to Peterman, and maybe it's in the pre-draft process, and he's going through his work ethic, and he's breaking down film and up on the whiteboard. And you're Sean McDermott, and you're just smitten. So you draft him. You draft him. And then you think to yourself, you know what? Maybe he's better than Tyrod Taylor. Maybe.
Well,
do you remember the week before the Charger game?
That was, another low point in Bills' drought history. Up to that point, they hadn't made the postseason. The streaker. I remember the streaker going across the field after it's the Saints. The Saints come in, absolutely demolish, run all over the place. Tyrod was terrible that day.
Terrible.
And Nathan Peterman, in garbage time, delivered a touchdown drive. And, you know, the shout song was played and the flag waivers came out. And I'm like, okay, who cares? Oh, no. Apparently that was enough. And I remember this too, Danger. Like, you and I, the decision came down after that game. Like, wait a second. Hold on. Tyrod's not hurt. Tell me the time in NFL history that a fifth-round rookie went in because just of a coach's decision. Not an injury, not anything else. There was nothing up until that point that would lead us to believe that Nathan Peterman was ready for that moment.
Correct. I remember that Saints game. I was at that Saints game. If you were at that Saints game, you may remember it as well. It was depressing. The weather was dank. It was just gray and overcast and cold, and the Saints just came in there, and Drew Brees just did whatever he wanted to do. And Tyrod was atrocious that game. Really, really bad.
Terrible. And terrible Tyrod.
And so compared to that, anything would look good. And so when we got back to work that week after the Saints game, one of our coworkers, whose office was right next to mine, big Bills fan. Massive Bills fan, and very typical Bills fan who only views the team through rose-colored glasses all the time. You love them because they're eternally optimistic, and they believe that no matter what the case, this team is going to win. This is it. This is the move. This is the season. You all have a fan friend in your life who is this way, and there's nothing wrong with them being that way. But there is a bit of reality that needs to get dosed in there as well. And that's where we came in. He came into my office that day that they announced it, so excited. Because everybody was so frustrated with Tyrod. Tyrod isn't the guy. He's not doing it. Did you see how bad he looked? He looked so bad in that game. This is the move. And I want to say that the Bills going into that game were like 5-5. They were a 500 team with Tyrod as their quarterback. For Tyrod, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, the Bills were farting around at that point. They were farting around.
He came into our office so excited about this move. This is the move. And you heard it. I believe this is a masterstroke. If Nathan Peterman is what we saw in the Saints game in the preseason, he could be the man. And we all know how that turned out. Masterstroke was born, and thus a legend born in the sports bar.
Right. He didn't come on as Master. He came on as Chris. That was his real name. And literally, it was recalling how he called this a master stroke. You and I just were like, hey, master stroke. How did that kind of work out? And then people, it just stuck. It was one of those things that stuck. And to Chris's credit, he allowed us to continue just to call him master stroke.
Now, he also made predictions after that initial prediction with some regularity here in the sports bar. And almost without fail,
he would be, the exact opposite would be true of what he said. It was almost like you had to really try hard to be as wrong as he was. We all remember the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl where Masterstroke made some predictions.
I do have faith that Wade Phillips, the defensive coordinator for the Rams, will find a way to take some pieces of Brady's arsenal out of the game. I would be shocked right now if Edelman had a good game in the Super Bowl.
MVP.
I think Phillips is smart enough to take him out, and I don't think he's going to be a factor. The one thing I do like, by the way, and I will say this, I know there's a lot of prop bets on this. I don't know what the number is on Chris Hogan. I just have a gut feeling that he's going to have a big game for the Patriots because they're going to take Edelman out.
It's the best. The absolute best.
To review, the former Bills head coach is good.
Yep.
And the former Bills wide receiver is good. But Edelman, eh.
And Edelman was the MVP. Now, this went on for a while, and you know, Masterstroke continued to work with us for a while. And eventually, you know, as happens in life, your paths go in different directions, and his path led him down to Florida. He lives on the Gulf Coast now, and he's enjoying life with his wife, and I want to say he's not retired, but he's just enjoying life better down in Florida. It's where he wanted to be. We kept in touch. We actually talked to him just a couple of seasons ago. We had Masterstroke on with us. And this is when we had an issue, serious issue with Masterstroke.
This is when the bid ended, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game. But I actually like the Bills in a low-scoring game, like 23-20. We've always figured out how to stop their offense, thankfully. Not completely, but we seem to have always had a decent time against Lamar Jackson. And they always seem to be a lot lower scoring than usual. I just have a feeling it's going to be lower scoring. And the Bills will be right around their spread with a 3-point win somewhere in there. But I like them in the low 20s somewhere there.
It's possible, Masterstroke, but we're going to hold you accountable one way or the other. So you've got them winning something that they normally don't do, a close game against the Ravens. You say 23-20 on Sunday.
I do. That goal for their last eight has got to end somewhere. And I think it ends this week.
Now, remember where the Bills were in the 2022 season. They were a team that was still kind of learning how to win games. A lot of close games, and in one-score games, there was a stretch there where they were 0-8 in one-score games.
Right. They're coming off an AFC championship appearance, but you could see there was miles between them and Kansas City. They lose by 3 scores in that game, and that was it. In the years you and I have been doing it, and again, we're coming up on 9 years, we've never picked the score right once. And that guy did. He's the only guy in the history of sports bar that said, this is going to be the score of the game. And he called it.
So, at that point, we're like, well, nobody cares when you're right. We don't want you in here being right all the time. We only like you when you're wildly unpredictable and you're making predictions that can't possibly come to fruition.
I still think, and again, we have to hash this out. We allow him back in once for the holidays.
I reached out to him today to wish him a happy anniversary. If you want, we can talk to him during happy hour. We can reach out to him during happy hour. And
did he get back to you?
Yeah,
What's he doing? Just kind of hanging out there?
Yeah, I was just like, hey, you know, would you consider coming on in the sports bar to celebrate our anniversary? And he said, I'll be in the car from 5 to 5:30. I'm like, oh, that's happy hour. Maybe we can get you on.
Maybe we can get him on. I know there would be a certain sector of Bills fans and listeners that would say, absolutely not. This Bills team has a feel of destiny to them. Let's not invite this guy in, invite the bad karma, because then all of a sudden you lose the Niners, you lose the Rams, you lose the Lions. And
bad karma. I love it. I mean, the guy is the most harmless, lovable Bills fan you'll ever meet. Yet he's the enemy because he's the one that's thought that starting Peterman would be a good idea. Keep that guy away from my team. Nate Peterman, 6 of 14, 66 yards, 5 interceptions.
And these weren't, oh, it's off the receiver's hands or... No, they were pretty bad. Yeah. It was in the soccer stadium. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a brutal, brutal outcome. But it was a day that will live in sports bar infamy forever because it gave birth to a legend. Happy anniversary, masterstroke from your friends here in the sports bar.
Oh, I'd love to catch up with him if we can get him in the app. We are loaded today.
We are loaded
today. Bills news, looking forward, looking back. Matt Perino, Syracuse Post Standard coming up at 3:25. But, Danger, go easy on him. You have a bone to pick with Perino?
I think he just needs to get with the program, okay? I mean, if you can't enjoy a victory, a Bills victory, with a little Italian music, a little Bruno Martino, and you kick your feet up and just relax, pour yourself a nice glass, a tumbler of bourbon or scotch, maybe light a victory cigar, I mean, that's living. But Perino thinks it's weird? Nah, get out of here. Get with the program, pal. Get with the program, Perino.
I'm going to say maybe he softened his stance. I mean, at least I hope he is. I kind of hit him with that, didn't kind of get it, maybe after it sinks in a little bit. Michael Leone, he would understand, right?
I think so.
Yeah, head coach of the Rochester Americans. Now, today, not in studio. That's because, well, they're on the bus, on their way up to Montreal. So I don't know if he's going to be on the bus. I don't know if they've checked in, but we'll catch up with the head coach as now. He's got Devin Levi he can trot out tomorrow night between the pipes.
He's going to have a real dilemma on his hands here come February if it is a Bills-Lions Super Bowl like many are predicting.
He's already said he's totally Lions. And as it turns out, he could actually go to New Orleans. Isn't that weird? Like the Amherst don't play on Saturday and you could make it down there?
Yeah, if you have an in, if you have a way, you got to check that off your bucket list. Absolutely. Week 12 of the NFL gets underway Thursday night. We'll talk waiver wires for fantasy football with Michael F. Florio from NFL Network stopping by before we get to 5 o'clock as well.
Yeah, I guess we can kind of put the rest of Audric Estime. he's the guy.
Denver running back for that matter.
Yeah, I guess that's not the way to kind of go, but we'll take a look at these matchups. Maybe you have some bye week concerns. It used to be bye weeks were in October. I'm fine with them being now, actually. It seems... Oh, my gosh, could you ask for a better bye week for Buffalo? Or would you say opposite, coming off a win like that, you want to get right back out on the field?
How about the concept of, I'll bring this up to him, how about the concept of the sabotage drop? At this point of the season, there are players that are probably sitting on your bench or on your roster that you know, like, you maybe are using them, but you don't really want to use them, and they're not going to, you just know, they're not going to produce the rest of the season, so you just drop them in favor of somebody who might give you some potential down the stretch, or a handcuff, a running back who could step into a larger role down the stretch here. The sabotage drop, where another manager sees a brand name player who isn't producing but doesn't really know and goes ahead and picks him up thinking, oh yeah, that's the player I can start this week, only to see them do nothing. I wonder if Florio has a list of players that qualify as a sabotage drop at this point of the season.
Are we buying in on MVS? He scored again.
Are we buying in on him? It's a good question.
I'm going to ask him on that. Not that we're paying attention to New Orleans Saints football, but maybe your fantasy team needs a receiver. F coming up at 4:45. And all right, we're thinking Master Stroke will be on the phone.
Well, yeah, we'll try and get Master Stroke on during happy hour to celebrate our anniversary. 7 years ago today, Nathan Peterman starting in place of Tyrod Taylor against the Chargers. 866-4FAN is our phone number if you want to pull up a stool. 585-866-4326. And we're on X. That's Elon's Twitter, at the Fan Rochester. All day today, all I've seen in my feed is Jets content. Jets firing their GM, Joe Douglas. They're in their bye week. Somebody had to be fired, I guess. There you go. The Jets are as dysfunctional as they've ever been.
There's a movie from 10, 15 years ago that's super dark, Danger. Do you ever see Very Bad Things?
Who's in that?
Cameron Diaz.
Yes.
She's the bride-to-be. And the plot of this is
they're in Vegas.
Yeah. And it's kind of just dark humor on how weddings, we make too much of them. And, well, basically, a lot of people end up dead in this. Who's next on the Jets that their career is going to end here? Oh, my gosh. The head coach, the GM, the owner might be like, you know what? I'm going overseas. Let somebody else handle this. This was a promising team. This was a team that had young talent. This was the team 2 years ago that we were concerned about here in Buffalo. It's not the Dolphins. It's the Jets. The Jets play this physical brand, and the Jets have this head coach that we know from the 49ers. All they need is a quarterback. Oh, we didn't get it right in the draft. Let's try this again. when's the next time the Jets are going to be at, like, what happened to that physicality? What happened to everything? You lost to Anthony Richardson. You lost to a guy that was benched the week before. So I don't mean to pile on you, Jet fans. Just the fall and the lack of promise. And you know where it starts? It starts right at the top. What you have to be hoping is, hey, Mr. President is going to give your owner an assignment overseas and let somebody else call the shots.
Well, if anybody calls the shots, it'll be his brother. Maybe things improve if that happens. But with Joe Douglas, you look at his track record. I mean, I guess if there's a blemish, it's believing that Zach Wilson was going to be your franchise quarterback and not doing everything you can to surround him with the kind of talent to make him successful in the NFL. You could argue that you did with the skill position players that you drafted. Garrett Wilson is great. Breece Hall is fantastic. Sauce Gardner. I mean, you had the offensive and defensive rookies of the year on both sides of the ball. You drafted talent. This guy drafted talent. At what point did the owner become meddlesome in the operation? Well, I can tell you when. It was probably like 4 years ago. And at that point, mm-hmm. Joe Douglas kind of hamstrung and was not really able to do his job the way he effectively knows that. Joe Douglas is going to be fine. The Jets are not going to be fine after this move. Robert Saleh will be fine. But the Jets will not be fine.
Is Robert Saleh amused by what's happening?
Robert Saleh going to Green Bay and doing what he's doing for the rest of this season is, I believe, just a deliberate FU to Aaron Rodgers. Did anybody complain in Green Bay when Aaron Rodgers left? Was anybody upset when Aaron Rodgers left? I mean, doesn't that tell you all you need to know? When a good player, somebody you love, leaves an organization, it's met with sadness. It's met with resistance. No, don't let him go. What's wrong with us? No, they're all like, yeah, see ya. Bye. And now you've got Saleh in Green Bay, where I'm sure Rodgers views that as like a direct attack on him, on his loyalty. And you could say he didn't get the coach fired. He got the coach fired. And you could say that the GM wasn't going to get signed. His contract was expiring. I mean, if you're the Jets, it doesn't matter what your next move is. You can try to sell me on anybody as their next GM or head coach. And I'd be like, yeah, that's great. Good for you. Who's the owner of the team? Next case. It's not going to change. Will not change. Dysfunction starts at the top. And they are dysfunctional, boy. I have no idea. I mean, I get it. You make the move now, I suppose. But what does that do? What message does that send to somebody who might be in line to be your next GM or your next head coach? This is how we act.
You're right. Like, you're hoping you can hire a GM and then hire the coach. Or maybe this will be the Jet thing. Oh, well, Phil Savage did such a good job here. We're going to, like, just keep
Phil
him on.
Phil Savage, that's right.
He's the interim GM.
That's right. I mean, like, based on what? What success? Based on what? Good luck. I just think it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Like, are the players now going to be motivated because the GM is out of the building? Is this going to help you win games down the stretch?
Well, what's the next thing in the storyline? It's an injury, right? Like, how do we get Aaron Rodgers? How does he exit? He's not the type of guy, all right, my team is eliminated and it's December 29th. I'm going to go up to Buffalo and face that defense. Can we call right now? He's not playing in that game.
I think that would be hilarious. I'm not rooting for injury, but it does feel like the kind of thing where, oh, yeah, my hamstring, just not. I want to give Rodgers at least the benefit of the doubt in that he does love playing football. I think he does love playing football. He's just not good at it anymore. He can't do what he used to do. He probably loves playing.
Huh. You mean to tell me once you hit the age of 40, this is more often than not what happens? You're kidding.
You hit a wall. You hit an absolute wall. He was cooked in Green Bay. And what the Jets gave up to get him, which is essentially two top 45 picks, somewhere in that ballpark, that's basically what they gave Green Bay for Rodgers.
I want to go back and look at all the tweets. First Monday night football game because the Jets go down the field. The Jets are going to be a problem, everyone. Oh, my gosh. The should have stopped right there. That was the highlight of the season. Or maybe it was a Thursday night win over the Patriots. Like, what is the Jets' highlight reel from 2024 going to be?
Well, these are problems that we're not experiencing, luckily, anymore here. Thankfully, anymore here with the Bills. And to talk about during the bye week here, to talk about the state of the organization, where we are, and what's ahead for the 9-2 Buffalo Bills. We always love welcoming in Matt Perino, who covers the team for the Syracuse Post-Standard. He joins us next on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The Fan, Rochester Sports Update.
New York Jets firing general manager Joe Douglas. Phil Savage, the former Browns GM, takes over on an interim basis. Of course, it's the bye week for the Bills players as they are off this week. Sean McDermott on what is after the bye.
A little bit of it is rest. I think a little bit of it is, you know, having a chance to do some self-scouting and evaluation of what we do and how we do things and fundamentals as well. I think the other part is, you know, making sure, you know, we put together a good game plan for when the players return as well.
Matt Perino, Syracuse Post-Standard, and the Shout Podcast joining us next year in the Sports Bar. Amherst hockey tomorrow, the team playing at Laval. We'll talk to head coach Mike Leone next hour. Sabres out west tomorrow night, taking on Los Angeles. Sports brought to you by GetMyPerks.com, where you can save 2 hours at Wildwood. Gene Battaglia, The Fan, Rochester.
Top Shelf Sports Talk. You're hanging out in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
Back in the Sports Bar, it's Danger and Battaglia. Glad you're with us and always excited to welcome in our buddy covering the Buffalo Bills for the Syracuse Post-Standard. Even on a bye week, we're talking Bills football with Matt Perino. And Matt, right off the top here, I got to say, I know I wasn't here last week, but I got a report back from my co-host across from me here. You're not on board with our Bruno Martino Victory Monday celebration, the listening to Italian music after a Bills win. You found this weird, off-putting. Talk to me about this, because I want you to get with the program, pal.
I just thought that it felt like Gino was trying to wine and dine me, okay? Like, it was real, like, low tones, like a real, like, different vibe. There it is. And yeah, it's just like, I don't know. If I'm going into dinner, yeah, let's go. Let's have a glass of wine. Let's get some chicken parmesan. But we're talking football, so it's just a little bit weird. But you guys do what you want to do. There's no judgment when Matt Perino comes into the Sports Bar. I like everything that Gino and Danger's got going on.
Yeah, listen, here's one thing we can agree on, Matt. You may not be into this song. Don't be the media guy who waves your finger at music here.
Oh, no. I like a little music. What else you got? That's it.
Well, Matt, in all seriousness, and again, for anybody who's like, why do they do that? It literally was the day after the Bills-Cardinals win. It's a Monday, and Danger is trying to find for what. I don't know how we landed on Bruno Mars, Danger, but you hit the wrong button.
Yeah, I just grabbed the wrong thing, and all of a sudden, this classical Italian music is playing. I'm like, you know what? It doesn't sound that bad. I kind of like where we're at right now. Let's kick up our feet, maybe pour a nice glass of wine or a nice bourbon, light up a victory cigar, and this is how we're celebrating Victory Monday in the Sports Bar moving forward.
When I lived in Vegas,
There was this like speakeasy, old school, it's called Capo's, and you walk in and you go to the front door, like you're going into a restaurant, and you walk in, it's just this big hollowed out room, and you're like, what's going on here? So you start looking around and you're like looking for a door or an entrance. And all of a sudden a guy behind the door, like pops open this little, like look through window and says, oh, welcome to Capo's. What's the password? Yeah. You're like, what? If you know it, you can get in. But that's the kind of music they played in there. And so, like, I'm done with the music. The timing. It just was a little odd.
Matt, a win over the Chiefs. And, yes, Josh Allen was impressive. The defense was impressive. Tell me your thoughts here on what Sean McDermott did. The Sean McDermott of a few years ago on 4th and 2 actually trust Allen, trust his offense to go for it in that situation?
I thought Mike Golic Jr. had a great post on my post when I talked that after the game. I felt like this was a moment where it felt like Sean McDermott leveled up a little bit. And he quote tweeted the post with a Matrix GIF.
Yes.
It says, it's Morpheus saying he's starting to believe. That's, and I was right. Like, first of all, I'm a sucker for a Matrix GIF to start with. But it makes a lot of sense. It's like all of the painful moments that, you know, this team and McDermott specifically has endured, I think you have to learn after a while that the only way to beat an aggressive team like the Chiefs is to beat them with aggression. And, you know, we all saw that movie before. Had they gone for a field goal, which, by the way, is not a chip shot and is not a guarantee with the way that Tyler Bass has been kicking the football. I know he had that really nice moment, but to miss that extra point early in that game, and, oh, by the way, my game prediction, 31-21 Bills, Bass missed field goal or extra point, I would have had it right on the nose. So that was tough for me. But he didn't kick that field goal. And you turn around, it's a 5-point game. You give the ball back with 2 minutes to Patrick Mahomes, and you're telling me he's not going to go drive down for 7 with what we saw on the drive, the previous drive, when they went down pretty easy to score late in the fourth quarter. So I think you knew what was on the line. You knew what you had to do. I thought that the way that they moved the ball on that drive, and then a little bit less fanfare, that drive at the end of the second quarter when you're down and you're trying to get some points to go up with the lead, and then you're going to get the ball after the half. They managed that drive perfectly in the way that they used the clock. They got the ball down the field and then were able to get the 3 points. I just thought it was a big moment for Sean McDermott.
Yeah, and you're making great points. We discussed this yesterday as well. I'm curious as to if there was a moment where Sean McDermott did gain that sense of self-awareness, because let's face it, everybody watching that game knew or knows that if you settle for a field goal there and you give Mahomes that much time, they're going to score on you. But it feels like that was the first time that McDermott actually realized it and took action, and Josh took matters into his own hands because he knew he had the faith and the trust of his head coach to go out there and make a play. Was there a specific time here with McDermott over the last season or so where you think he kind of... I have one thing in my mind that I'm thinking of that, like, well, maybe now he'll become more self-aware of what he does and how he does it. And that's the Ty Dunn piece that kind of exposed him for some of the things that he said early in his coaching days with the Buffalo Bills. Is just a more mature Sean McDermott that has a little bit more self-awareness now?
Yeah, I think when you asked that question, and I got to thinking about some games that would have been maybe the impetus for a real shift. Remember that Eagles game where it felt like the Bills, it was right around the tie piece. I think it was the week before the tie piece came out. And they were moving the ball. They were scoring points. It was a bit of a shootout, and they end up winning on that field goal. And I think that there was a little bit of a less than aggressive approach to that last drive. And yeah, who knows what the actual moment was. But I think in looking at this team, losing another one-score game to end your season last year against KC at home, to me, that should have then equaled 9 months of Sean McDermott taking a long look in the mirror. And to his credit, I think bringing in John Perry, who, by the way, early returns haven't been great in that department. Now, I did ask him about the challenge in the first half, and he said they didn't have a lot of time. They had a couple replays that they were looking at. And, you know, it turns a 3rd and 1 into a 3rd and 8. And so the advantage of that potential play there, that Sean McDermott said he'd probably do it again. And then I kind of agree with that, even though I didn't think it was a good challenge. If you're fumbling around in the moment and Perry's trying to run through a couple of different angles and you say it's close enough and the risk outweighs or the reward outweighs the risk, because it is the first half. But that's kind of a side note. And I just think that like Perry has not been super great in that department so far. But who knows? Maybe these are the kinds of gaffes, work-throughs, like is that relationship is still kind of building that you need. But just the aggressiveness, it never for a moment seemed like on fourth and two with the game on the line right there that they ever even considered not going for it there. And that to me is like just the assertiveness and the confidence to go for it. And he talked about it after the game too, saying that they spent all week going through that specific scenario around that time left with that game situation and what are they going to do in that moment. And they made that decision before they ever got to the game. And that to me is like the big step is like, all right, I'm preparing for anything that gets thrown at me and I'm going to know what to do in the moment in a blink.
Matt Perino, Syracuse Post Standard, and the Shout podcast is now, Matt, we're not talking about the division. We're talking about the race for the number one seed. And look, before we get into all the issues surrounding the Bills here, oops, sorry about that. You're talking with my hands here. Is there the Chiefs are a team that Buffalo facing just as much as a divisional opponent. And when you're looking at the Chiefs at 9-1, how does this Chiefs team compare to Chiefs teams in years past, would you say? How would you assess this race for the number one overall seed?
To me, the biggest problem that I think the Chiefs have is that their real pillar players, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, who have been thorns in the Bills' side for years, they just don't quite seem like the same players. Now, it's a dangerous thing to say because I think we kind of said it about Kelce last year, but they're older. And as the years go on and you're facing, you know, some of these younger up-and-coming players, I mean, I thought for most of that game the other day, Osiris Torrance played really well. Baldinger put out a clip with, like, I think, 12, 13 plays where Torrance was having, you know, a ton of success against Chris Jones, who dominates in those one-on-one spots. Now, Jones was also double-teamed a ton in that game, as he's going to be in most of the time, but that hasn't worked for the most part over the course of their time. So I think that's a big piece of it, and they don't have anybody else opposite Kelce that you have to be fearful for. I mean, that drive by Xavier Worthy, that was about the best drive that he's had all season, and it just didn't even really matter because his impact on the game was just that one drive where they were able to get in the end zone, and you know, Travis Kelce really didn't do anything all game. So I think that's, to me, the biggest thing. I also think that Josh Allen is, like, if you're thinking about it in, like, the terms of, like, you know, grade school, middle school, high school, college, undergrad, then graduate school, and then PhD, like, I think Josh Allen has a PhD in going against Spagnuolo's defense at this point. Is he always going to get the upper hand and ace every test? No. But there's not a lot of things at this point going up against that Kansas City defense and that play caller specifically that he hasn't seen. So I think when you add all of that together and the newness to this offense, this is something that I was harping on all offseason. And I think a lot of people were pushing back. Like, you lose Stephon Diggs, you lose Mitch Morse, you lose Gabriel Davis. But the way they reimagine the offense with the specific pieces, we're seeing it incrementally week by week, them figuring out different skill sets. The Curtis Samuel revelation over the last 2 weeks is massive. This is exactly what they brought him here to be. And he's a defensive PI, which would have been for like 20-some yards, where he gets interfered with and doesn't get that added to his stat line. And then that short play in the flat, where he catches it and probably goes for 8 to 10 more, away from a 100-yard game with that massive touchdown late in the game. That's huge. And now you have to deal with all these different flavors and a really good, strong running game that goes three players deep. And to me, I think that's the biggest difference.
Matt, when you look ahead to what's left of this season, under the headline of it's not necessarily who you play, but when you play them, it's kind of shocking to look at the schedule now and see only one team that's above 500, the Detroit Lions, left on the Bills' schedule. That can all change, obviously, between now and the end of the season or now when the Bills play them. But just focusing in here on the next three games, you know, realistically, the Bills, if they want that one seed, probably can stumble one, maybe two more times this season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I haven't seen anything over the course of the last 6 weeks where if they get healthy, they can't run off the rest of the way and finish, what is it, 15-2? This Patriots team is it's got some spirit. Going on the road against the Rams and the Lions back-to-back is tough. But I also don't think that the Lions are necessarily the team that you see when they play the Jaguars, right? Like, they're probably a little bit closer to the team that barely beat Houston, that, you know, if you play well against Jared Goff and you scheme against him, that becomes a much more interesting game. I think the Bills and the Lions are – it's funny. I don't even think the Lions are, like, as good as they are. I know they're everybody's favorite team right now. But I have huge questions about Goff, and I have huge questions about that defense without Aiden Hutchinson once we get to the really important months. And so if I was power ranking the league right now, I'd probably put 3 to 4 AFC teams ahead of the Lions. And I know that probably sounds crazy to a lot of people, but they're still probably going to be underdogs. The Lions are the Lions going on the road. But if you look at the totality of this, and plus I think the Niners are the second hardest team left on their schedule. You're getting them at home and you're getting them off the bye when Sean McDermott is so dialed in and good. To me, the biggest thing is, like, how do you maintain the drive, which I don't think they have a hard time doing. I think Sean does a good job in that department, but also stay healthy over this stretch. Cause that to me is the most important thing now. Get to that. I don't really even care where they wind up, because it doesn't look like the Baltimore Ravens are going to be able to catch the Pittsburgh Steelers. You've won on the road in Pittsburgh before. You've won on the road in Baltimore too, but the way that first one went, I don't know if you want to go back there, but I still think what we've seen over the last six games and the high points of Amari Cooper when he's in the lineup, this is a really tough team to deal with.
Yeah, Matt Perino, Syracuse Post-Standard, the Shout podcast is the Bills. The bye week is here, and then coming out of it, Matt, now, you know, obviously we'll find more information about Kincaid and Coleman and certainly Spencer Brown. The one thing they've been teeing up here is the eventual return of Matt Milano. Matt, this isn't... It's not as easy as, hey, this was a guy who was an all-pro, let's plug him back in, is it? Because you have Dorian Williams. We don't know also that Matt Milano, what level he's going to be at. It's going to be over a calendar year since we've seen him in a regular season game.
No, that's a great point. And I asked Sean McDermott about that yesterday. Like, okay, you get him back, whenever that ends up being, he's on your active roster. Is it go be the Matt Milano that you were before and, you know, go play a bunch of snaps? Or is it like, you got to be careful with this and ramp him back up the right way? And he said something very interesting. He said, that's obvious. They have to do right by Milano, right? Like, get him back in a speed that he's comfortable with. But he's also got to be accountable to this defense that has played so well and the flow that they're in. To just throw a Matt Milano back in there, as good as he is, there's a disruption to that. Because now you're going to potentially have, maybe at the start, a rotation between Dorian Williams and Matt Milano. You can get creative with when you get him on the field with three linebackers and maybe start to work him in a little bit more on run plays specifically because of his ability to shoot gaps and play against the run a little bit more consistently, I'd say, probably than what we've seen from Dorian Williams. Even though Dorian Williams has been really good this year, I still think that ceiling is Milano. And then you have to consider the guy hasn't played a legitimate football game since September last year, early October. So there's going to be a level of rust, I would imagine, just like the speed of the game and getting back in that department. So there's a lot to consider when getting him back in the lineup, but that's why I think opening the window when they did, and then maybe if you could activate him this next week, he doesn't have to play against San Francisco, but he's got to be practicing, right? Like, he's got to be, once you can get that red jersey off of him and get him as acclimated as possible, that's the big piece of it, too. And they actually are sitting at 52 roster spots, players on the roster right now. I think they're holding out that spot for either him or Dwayne Carter's eligible to come back after the Chiefs game. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage the numbers here over the next couple of weeks. I would imagine Virgil, if Coleman's ready to come back after the bye, I'd imagine they try to get Virgil back to the practice squad and activate those two guys.
And Matt, another residual effect of the Bills beating the Chiefs in the way that they did, in the fashion they did, with Josh Allen being the hero and scoring that that game-winning touchdown. The MVP conversation heats up here, and it'll only get louder and louder as the season comes to its conclusion. The debate between Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, is it a debate? Because statistically, when you put the two side by side, it's Jackson. Does it come down to that, or does it come down to the team who finishes with the one seed? And if that's the case, does that matchup between the Bills and the Lions actually have some meat as well in terms of who the MVP of the league might be when it's all said and done?
Potentially. And I mean, I guess like if you're going off of recent years, last year is a great exercise in what ultimately gets you an MVP award, because Josh Allen's stats were dramatically better than Lamar's last year. And I made the argument that I thought he was probably the MVP, just knowing the production that he had and everything like that. But Lamar and the Baltimore Ravens were the one seed. And ultimately, well, although quarter or wins aren't necessarily a quarterback stat, they seem to be one of the most important stats when it comes to determining the most valuable player. And I think there's another piece to all of this. Derrick Henry, if you put the Bills offensive roster and the Ravens offensive roster in a bucket and you pick out names and power rank them, you're going to start probably with Josh or Lamar, one or two, in whichever order you have. Derrick Henry is going to be the next name that comes out of that list, and he's going to be pretty close to that tier. I don't think the Bills offensively have anybody that you put even close to that, as good as James Cook has been this season. So I think just from that perspective as well, I think Josh Allen is doing more with less, and I also think that the Bills are winning more games. And some of the losses, too, you think about the Browns, the Raiders for the Ravens. Like I think that those are huge demerits for Lamar Jackson when you're kind of putting these two guys side by side.
If you had to just kind of line up the teams, Matt, and this will be the last one for me, just by their weakness, right? Their biggest weakness, their Achilles heel. For Baltimore, I would say it's their secondary. I don't know if Trey White is going to fix that at this point there. They allow yards that would be a problem going up against a Kansas City or a Buffalo. If it's Kansas City, I don't like their offensive line. I heard about that going in. We saw it right there, and sure, we can give the Bills credit, but they've got to figure that out. What is Buffalo's biggest weakness, would you say, heading into the final stretcher?
I think it's a combination of like what we saw against Baltimore, to a lesser degree against Indianapolis, and it didn't matter because Flacco was just handing the ball back to them over and over again. It's a combination of explosive running plays allowed and how that can kind of change the course of the game, specifically when the offense is kind of grinding, maybe not totaling the kind of touchdowns they usually do. I mean, that game, the Bills offense just couldn't find the right notes to be able to score enough points. They scored, I think, 10. Most of it came, if not all, in the second half after the game was kind of already out of reach. So that, to me, is the way to try to beat the Bills, is get your run game going consistently. And as good as they played against Kansas City the other day, they didn't have Isaiah Pacheco, and Pacheco was really good in the divisional round game last year in the playoffs. So that's another aspect to this matchup where – it's interesting, though, because I think the Bills, if you take that game and Josh Allen doesn't throw that interception and, you know, maybe they end up going down and scoring a field goal, it's a much different feel to the game. It felt closer because of the dramatics late in the game. But I thought Buffalo outplayed them. They outgained them. They had less turnovers. It was a consistently better performance by the Bills. But if a team is able to run and force a couple explosives in that department, that's when – the Bills are tested with their style of offense, the way that they want to play. They're going to rely and they're going to stay patient with their run game, even if it's not working early on in the game. And over the course of 60 minutes, they hope that it just wins out. And if a team gets up on you early, sometimes that's dangerous.
Matt, what are you and Ryan and the whole crew there at Syracuse Post-Standard working on here this week that we can check out the Shop podcast at Syracuse.com?
Yeah, it's going to be mostly quiet, especially at the website. We're recording a couple shows later tonight that will air Wednesday night in our usual staple slot and then on Friday. And the cool thing is the Friday show, we're doing a new format every week where we call it three big questions. And Ryan asked me one. I ask him one. And we discuss, obviously. And then we bring on one of our insiders, our Shout insiders. They all get to put in questions. We pick out one or two every single week, and we actually bring them live on the show, on video. So, Gino,
I don't know, buddy. All you gotta do is become a Shout Insider, and you can get on there real quick.
All right. Sign up right now. Yeah,
give him the short code, and he'll get after it right now.
Love it.
Enjoy your weekend here, Matt.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your week.
You got it. There's Matt Perino covering the Buffalo Bills for the Syracuse Post-Standard, doing a great job here. Even during the bye week, the work doesn't stop.
No, of course not. We didn't even get to the conversation about the Jets, but it's like, whatever.
Just keep pouring dirt on the Jets.
Little do we know, there is going to be two bye weeks for the Bills.
Yeah, very good.
Just a quick note here, a local sports story, because my phone was blowing up just now. You know, we're the proud home of St. John Fisher Athletics. Paul Vosburgh, the head coach since 1991, just announced his retirement for the football team.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So it's a team that went 3-7 this year. So time for a new start at Fisher. And congratulations to Coach Vos on, I mean, how many people stay in any place, in any profession that long, much less in football?
Yeah. Well, raise a glass. That's a hell of a run. Happy trails, Coach. And thanks for all you did for the community and for that program. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got more here in the sports. I want to talk a little bit more about that MVP race, because if statistics are a thing, the Lamar Jackson supporters have a pretty good case. I'll explain.
Okay. Talking more about Sean McDermott, can coaches grow? Can we pinpoint things? And bring in one of the experts here and play what's being said about Sean McDermott.
Busy 4 o'clock hour on deck. We've got Amherst head coach Mike Leone. We'll talk some fantasy football with Michael F. Florio as well. All on the way before 5 o'clock here on the Fan Rochester.
You're listening to the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on 95.7 FM and AM 950, the Fan Rochester.